Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today is Friday, December 30th, the last day that we'll be talking to you on in the year 2022. And I'm so excited because we're going to be speaking to none other than the New York State Assembly member who represents Assembly District 90, which is comprised totally of the city of Yonkers, the third largest city in the state. And we're going to talk to him about the recent legislation that he was instrumental in deducing and then promoting and eventually getting passed and signed by none other than Governor Kathy Hochul. Oh, and I see he's already on the line, so let's welcome him in and bear with me.
Hi.
A moment. Good morning, Hezzy, sir. How are you?
Good morning to you. Just want to start by thanking you again for the opportunity and again to wish everyone hopefully a joyous holiday. People that celebrated Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and Three Kings. And I always say, no matter what you celebrate, be positive, be happy, celebrate family, celebrate good health. And especially now as we finish off 2022 and we're looking forward to a new year in 2023, Hezzy. So to you and all your loved ones, a joyous and a healthy. Thanks, God.
And blessings to you as well, for sure. And for the city, you know, everybody needs a little bit of joy, and it's always good to talk about it. Well, you know what I find most compelling about this recent legislation, but it seems to have permeated your entire time as a representative of the city of Yonkers, as the assembly member, and before as well. Sometimes difficult for people to recognize that you need a tremendous amount of knowledge, experience, understanding, learning, and put it all together to be able to decipher what's required of people in government. And you seem to have an innate capacity to deduce and compress what's necessary, especially with this new legislation that was passed. These are your bills, initiated by you, endorsed by the governor, signed by the governor, and you prioritized how service needed to be restored for people who are vulnerable, for people in the medical industry who require the stuff, firefighters, the police, and so on and so forth. What made realize that this was, before you go on, and I don't mean to step on your toes, but think about it. You know, the assembly didn't begin yesterday, and it's been around for a very long time. I don't know how long New York State government has been functioning, but here it takes you to come around and show up and to do something that no one ever thought about. How does that come about?
Well, you know, when as to your point, anyone that seeks really, thank you very much, Hezzy, but anyone that seeks public office, whether to represent constituents locally, on a city council, on a board, on a county board of legislators, and as state representatives or federal representatives, our main responsibility is to truly put the time and effort to represent the best interests of the people we represent, the constituents. And for me,
right,
I'm blessed to be the assemblyman representing the city of Yonkers, even though, you know, the amount of people that they try to place in each assembly district is about 140,000 people. Yonkers, we all know, has been growing. It's the third largest city, to your point. And so there's like at least three assembly. There's a potential of even a fourth member coming into Yonkers because of the growth. But I represent Yonkers because my seat is 100% in Yonkers. So But
right.
But as a legislator, even though you represent an area of the state and I represent Yonkers, your job is also to look out for the best interest of New York State because you're a state representative. So a lot of the legislation, a lot of the laws that I push and I look at and I research and I try to initiate a change in policy, new legislation, is really as a result of life experience, as a result of my professional background, as an educator for many years, as an attorney, as a community activist, as a homeowner, as a family man. And the reason I'm throwing that out because in politics, you know, you need to live the life. You need to know when you talk about inflation, you talk about the economy, you need to understand what it is to pay bills. You need to understand what it is to have a mortgage, to pay taxes and water bills. You need to understand, you know, when you have children and you see the difficulty many mothers and parents have, even something as simple as diapers, not only for kids, but even many adults, many disabled individuals that rely, for example, on diapers, you know, and then you realize, you know, when people reach out and you communicate and you talk to people and representatives and agencies, and then you find out that it's a major issue that they're being taxed on these items. You know, so for me, I'm very proactive. So anytime I see an avenue where, hey, maybe there's a mistake, maybe there's a way we can improve New York State laws and legislation, maybe by adding language in the legislation, we can make it more feasible, more productive, more meaningful. And that's what I do. And even as a school principal for many years, some of the best recommendations I had as far as improving learning and classroom atmosphere and motivating students to do their best came from talking to parents and teachers and so many times from students where I sit with students and they say to me, Dr. Sage, you know, there's a way we can improve the way we do things. And, or really, let's talk about it. Tell me what you think and what do you recommend and how do you think we can change what we have and make it better? And very often that results in a change of policy at the school level. And then, you know, from a principalship, I became the president of the Board of Education, served there. So a lot of the good things, what I call best practices that took place, let's say maybe at a school I was principal of, I tried to push them to become district-wide. So why shouldn't all the kids, let's say in the case of Yonkers schools, benefit from something that works at school A or school B? And the same goes for state government. You know, I happen to represent Yonkers in Albany, and Albany is where, you know, the assembly is really the people's house. That's where legislation starts. That's where, you know, new laws take place. They come to the attention of the assembly really through representatives like myself that, you know, have a very active constituent base that truly reach out, that understand the dynamics in their community and take the initiative. That's what a lot of it is. You have some lazy legislators that, in my opinion, don't deserve to be there. You know, they rely on getting voted in because of maybe a party affiliation or whatever the factors are. But to a large extent, the role of a legislator is not only in your district, which we do a lot of constituent services, people that have concerns with vaccinations, as we took a very active role during the pandemic, unemployment claims, small business applications, even people that have issues with, for example, utility companies. I just had somebody this morning came into the assembly office that had a serious problem with an issue with Con Edison and billing, excuse me, and my staff, you know, reached out to sources and really hooked up this constituent and hopefully where they can resolve that matter. Or if somebody has an immigration problem or somebody has an issue with a state agency or a local agency involved in their condominium or association or their streets or housing, And these are the type of things that we do on a regular basis. But to your point, as far as legislation, 2022 for me was a great year. You know, usually legislators, you know, sponsor or co-sponsor pieces of legislation. And God knows, in my, really at this point, 4 years serving in the New York State Assembly. And by the way, I just got reelected this past November, so we're looking forward to another 2 years, hopefully great years. But in 4 years, I've co-sponsored over 2,000 pieces of legislation, you know, some myself and others. But I've sponsored dozens of legislation that are, you know, Native Sayage pieces of legislation where we initiated to a large extent, you know, the request to change laws or change policy. And, you know, we'll talk about them. But this year alone, Governor Kathy Hochul signed into law legislation, 6 pieces of legislation. That's amazing for, you know, in one legislative session to have the governor sign 6 bills, and we'll talk about them. You know, that's during 2022. And, of course, we have so many more that we're pushing, we'll push for in 2023. And but this is an opportunity to look at 2022 and to really go over these 6 pieces of legislation and the impact I think they would have on our city, not only Yonkers, but the entire state. Because any piece of legislation largely, you know, when it has a statewide impact, then, you know, you get bipartisan support, as I have. I reach out at the other side of the aisle, and I convince my colleagues that are Democrats and Republicans and others that, hey, this is a piece of legislation that benefits constituents. It's not a political football. It's something that truly is necessary or beneficial. And when you see support, a rally of support from both sides of the aisle of legislation, not only does it make it easier to have it passed in the Assembly and then the Senate, but also makes it easier for the governor, you know, to look at this and say, hey, this really benefits New York. Let me sign off on it. Sometimes the governor's people, they look at something and say, you know, we like this piece of legislation, but let's modify a few things. You know, and very often it comes back to me or the legislators, and we look at it and say, you know what? Yeah, that's a good recommendation. I can live with that. And that type of negotiations or communication really goes on between the 3 levels of government on the state, the Assembly, the Senate, and the governor's office. And at the end of the day, when there's consensus by all 3, like happened with my 6 bills, the governor signed off on them, and today they're legislative, you know, pieces that impact New York State in general. That's amazing.
Well, I think that's really the big issue, and what I didn't recognize before was I thought that when people went into the chamber of power, you know, the Assembly, Senate, the people that work on in the governor's office, and so, and there's so many other ancillary government places. But the thing, I thought that it was camaraderie. It was building personal relationships with other people that you may or may not know. But in reality, what I hear you saying, which it did not dawn on me, I don't know how I could be so obtuse about it, but basically what you're saying is it's not a question of politics. It's not a question of where you live, but how we all live, because we're all human beings. So
that's
we
right.
have the same needs, whether we're in Buffalo or whether we're in Yonkers or whether we're in New York City or in Binghamton, wherever. And we've got the same issues. And that's what binds us together. But quite often we're divided by politics, by gender, by money, all kinds of things. And yet all those things come to one flat line because we're all human beings and we all have the same needs
well, that's
at one time in our life or another.
You're so right.
It is absolutely amazing that you're able to eclipse all of this stuff.
Well, you got to be compassionate. You got to be humanitarian. You got to be, cost effective. You got to really combine a lot of initiatives, a lot of forces in social, economic development, and very often, you can't be one issue oriented. And some legislators get elected because they're big advocates of one issue. And I say, it's fine to have certain issues you believe in strongly, but once you get elected, you now represent everyone in your district. And you got to be able, even though you may lobby for that issue, maybe more so, you can't ignore most of the population. You can't ignore.
Exactly.
You got to be able to be a listener. You got to be able to research. You got to be able, and many of us, like myself, fortunately, I can rely on my life experience. I can rely on my professional background, my career, and say, hey, what would I do, or what's my issue, and how would I react? And, of course, listen to everyone else's opinions and recommendations. And at the end of the day, really gather all this information and say, you know what? What's the proper thing to do? And very often, it's not the extreme left or the extreme right. Too often, we've allowed government in New York and even across our nation to be caught up with this extreme left and extreme right. And I'm a big advocate, Hezzy, of our state, our nation really needs to restore government that is more mainstream, government that reflects the needs or the concerns or the issues of the majority of us, not the portion on the left, extreme left or the extreme right. And that's why I can be that consensus builder. I can be the someone that people at every side of the aisle will say, you know what, that's a voice of reason, because, he's fair when it comes to issues and concerns, but he's stern when it comes to, believing in something and taking a position on it. And that's my style, in anything I've done in life. And government is no different. People that become politicians, it's not a good thing.
The thing that is troublesome is not your competency and your compendium and knowledge base based on all the different responsibilities you've had in life. And you're not 20 years old, thank goodness, in some terms. And it's thank goodness that you have such experience and a depth of experience on so many different levels, as a educator, as a principal, as a board of education, board of trustee, a president, being a lawyer as well, and now an elected official on top of that. Yet people don't recognize some of the BS that goes on. Recently, there was this guy that was running. He created a resume. I guess he thought that would be the end all and be all, but he lied about everything. People don't have a mechanism to know, that you're the credible one. That's the thing. That's what's so interesting. How do we judge people on the same stellar level that you've accomplished? Because quite often people don't know it. They vote for you because they like the color of your skin, or they vote for you because of your religion, or they vote for you because of your height, or because of the way you speak, or the languages you speak, and so on and so forth. But we don't know what we're voting for.
But you're right. In America and Yonkers and New York is no difference. Unfortunately, too many people vote, based on philosophy and party affiliation, sometimes on the color of your skin, sometimes on, your ethnic background or your socioeconomic background. And, that definitely plays a role. But politically, to your point, the public at large, needs to be continuously educated to really you know, when they do go to vote, and that's the other problem, is many don't go to vote, you know, or they don't believe voting is important. And, you know, we see all across the state, even in this recent election with the assembly, you know, with over 36,000 votes cast in some assembly districts, you know, they're in court still trying to determine who the winner is, possibly by less than 10 votes. I mean, that's what's happening, you know, that there's so many close elections, and you try to tell the public at large, hey, you know, your well-being, your best interest is at stake. So when you go to vote, look at who's the most qualified. We looked at the last election. My district in Yonkers is relatively, in my opinion, a moderate district. And we had a governor's race where tons of money were put into this race. And we know that the Zeldin camp that were running against the governor-elect Kathy Hochul, you know, to a large extent had a game plan. And the game plan, in my opinion, was too extreme right. And they tried to promote a ton of fear. And they tried to distort. And, you know, a guy like me that, you know, normally, you know, isn't that mainstream, you know, where, you know, the residents of my district appreciate my policy, my style of governance, you know, where it's more reflective of mainstream. But because of all the political hype, you know, we had to run a very aggressive campaign. And fortunately, we won by over 1,800 votes. But to your point, many of the people that voted that normally would have voted, let's say, for the other party, crossed the line and voted for Nader Sayegh because they said, you know what, we know the name, we know his background, we know his history, and he's delivered for us. And that was the difference for me. But in many cases, some very good legislators that, in my opinion, were deserving of re-election lost. They lost because of what they call this red wave, and people were hyped up about crime and hyped up about bail reform, and which are concerns. Which, in my opinion,
but you know what the problem is that we've allowed all that dogma, political dogma, to insinuate itself and eclipse the needs of the people. So that we become radicalized by that. And the reason so many people are radicalized is because they don't know what our elected officials do. So
of
we
course.
Don't hear about it. You know, there's some people who are in office for 2 years or 4 years. You never hear a word from them. You don't know what legislation they're passing, why they passed it, why it matters. People don't know what's pertinent, what isn't pertinent. These are the things that drive the equation, and it's the way the system has evolved, where the public is distanced from the people we elect to office, and our elected officials are distanced from the people. You are differently, and thank God for that. You're able to recognize this innately or just like in front of your face because you've always been proactive. You're not afraid to talk. So,
I've always been people oriented. People that know me long before politics. You know, I practically served on every major board in the city because, you know, I love the city. I love communication. I love reaching out, socializing, and being productive and looking at where the issues are, whether food insecurity or, you know, education or career development or, you know, dealing with the homelessness problem and dealing with, you know, issues that, you know, really impact in what I've dealt with over many years that impacted a child's learning opportunities, whether they needed support services or they needed mental or coaching or mentorship. People don't realize how many young men and women that fail out of the system and they really get into drugs and alcohol and crime because their issues weren't addressed in a timely fashion, where correct. They did not have the stability at home and the mentorship. So these are things, you know, I'm proud to say, you know, over the years we've took action, whether on the educational level, on the governmental, to really not only fund these initiatives, but to be creative and say, you don't want to just put funds in an area. You want to basically say, you know what, let's identify an area of need and let's see how we can best address that area of need. If it, mm-hmm. if it's drug and alcohol addiction or crime, then you got to go to the source. So the source, in my opinion, involved, you know, making sure support services, enough psychologists in the public school system and elsewhere, making sure there's enough social workers and psychologists and individuals that can address issues in a timely fashion. If there's drug addiction, let's make sure we address it and give these young people, many of them, the services they need to hopefully get off drugs, get them their education, get them their careers, and get them jobs. Get them jobs where they can feel good about themselves, be productive. For many years, one area we ignored was students with disabilities where, you know, we provided some services to them. And then I've watched over the years when they officially graduated or we graduated them with these modified degrees out of high schools with no career training, no job training, and these individuals got lost. So over the years, there's been a ton of effort to say, hey, let the state get involved, the counties, the federal government. Let's provide initiatives to train these individuals, even though some of them may be in basic jobs, but they're jobs they have that they would have never had before. So now all of a sudden, they're productive. They can go to work. They can feel good about themselves. Many of them settle down and have families and you really safeguard the generation of families, because when you have somebody who's not functioning well or someone who's having difficulty, not only are they having difficulty, we know from experience their parents, their grandparents, their siblings, you know, their loved ones, everybody is involved with that difficulty. So when you address these issues, you know, at the end of the day, you see a positive, puts a smile on your face and their face, and, you know, then you feel good that something good happened. And, you know, that's what compassion and experience and hands-on over the years brings about in anything we do in life, any job we do, and public service and legislative roles and responsibilities, in my opinion, are no different. And I see this every day. I see those legislators on every level of government, you know, that truly care, and I see the goodness they put out. And there's some, to your point, that really don't deserve to be there. You know, they're there either for the paycheck, they're there because the status, it sounds good for the power of it, which is nonsense. You know, so for me, you know, thank God, you know, I have my career I can rely on. I can make financially a lot more as an educational leader, as an attorney, than I do as an assemblyman. But it's a responsibility I took. And by taking that responsibility, yes, you hinder yourself, you know, and there's many nights and many days when you're away from your family and you're up in Albany and you're attending conferences all over the state. But you know what? When you do it, you got to put your heart and soul into it, and you got to make it meaningful. You want to be able, as I'm doing today, at the end of a year in Albany, in session here in Yonkers and in Albany, to be able to look back and say, you know what, I'm proud of the fact that we were able, my staff and I, to accomplish, you know, from the legislative end, especially 6 bills signed by the governor, and from the constituent base, to look at our records and feel good about having served and helped thousands of people in Yonkers in many, many, many areas. And that's legislation, Hezzy. But, you know, if we may, you know, the first of the bills was my bill that relates to fees for gift cards. You know, and the governor signed it just before this holiday season, and that is, you know, that came as a result of people complaining that they would buy gift cards, right? And then, you know, they put them in a drawer and then realize they're expired, or if they try to use a portion of the gift card, then the merchants would give them a hard time and add fees. You know, what if you had a $100 gift card and you needed to spend $50 of it? Does that mean the other $50 are going to be charged fees, or, you know, within a year or less, you know, you find out it expired? But I paid for that gift card. That wasn't a promotional from a store. So this new legislation that took effect this December, and it's going to be permanent now, changes the whole policy and laws all over the state. And you know what? Other states now are looking at it and saying, hey, because the way I look at it, New York State, in my opinion, takes the lead on sometimes so many national issues. And by taking the lead on something like this, then before you know it, legislators in Illinois and California and Texas and all over the country are looking and saying, hey, we like this New York gift card legislation. We like the fact
that... What's interesting is it's not just the New York legislation. It's something that you defined. This has been going on for years. That's the thing that's so evasive for a lot of people. They don't recognize what they see in front of them. Yet you
that's
do.
True.
And I think that comes out of your background. It's your entire background from the moment you were born, your family, and then everything that you've accomplished in life. And when you reflect on that, it's not that your head is swelled, you know, of, you know, like thinking you're the best in the world, which I think you're phenomenal. But the point is that most people don't recognize their capacity. And they don't really celebrate it in a manner that is conducive to an entire society, which you have. So not only have you gained all this knowledge, but you've also moved into a place where you could do something about the knowledge that you've gained. And now you're just making it available for everyone.
Well,
and
that's key.
You know, like nobody even bothered. Even the special, the responders, like the ambulance services and people like that, they never thought that they should be the first ones to have electrical power when the power is down. Well, they can't help us if they can't get anywhere.
See, to your point earlier about, you know, we got to be concerned as human beings and, you know, and issues that confront us, confront people all across our state. You know, for example, on this bill that defines medical needs for essential electricity and requires certain service providers to have outreach plans for customers with medical needs. I mean, that's something that, you know, when you look what's happening recently in our state, you look at the major storms that impacted Buffalo and nearly 40 people died and, you know, now they're realizing there's many more, God forbid, that were, frozen to death in their cars or in their homes, and some because of the lack of electrical power or outages. And I've always felt that you need to make sure in anything we do in life, and utility companies are no different, they need to be more proactive. They can't wait for storms to happen and then say, well, we got a problem now. How do we handle it? And let's start getting help from out of state and let's make sure, you know, let's order generators. What do you mean order generators? I mean, shouldn't that be in place for police, fire, for ambulance, for first responders? Shouldn't there be a regular checkup where during the course of the year, if I know, you know, I have a storm season coming up, and now, you know, it's no longer the storm of the century. Unfortunately, whether it's climate change or other issues, we're witnessing, you know, storms that we're dealing with every year, and sometimes multiple storms. You look at what happened in Buffalo; they had storm after storm where what is it, 40 inches of snow that they've had the last, you know, 10 days, and
absolutely.
It's accumulated.
Yeah.
So, for example, these two pieces of legislation, one of them authorizes and mandates utility companies to make sure, and that's by planning and having plans in place and having during the course of the year, how many repair people does these utility companies have? Why is it they got to be active only during, God forbid, bad weather or storm outages or, you know, down wires or whatever? Why can't they on a regular basis have a plan of action where, of course, they're working with local and county government, but they got to go and know exactly in every community all the first responders, the police, the fire, to make sure there's a generator in place, to make sure that they check them on a regular basis, because
right.
God forbid, if there's an outage and there's a problem and you have a medical emergency, you have a fire, you have, you know, somebody that needs to go to the hospital immediately, but then the phones don't work or the power doesn't work at the police station or the fire or the first responders, you know, that's bad. So something like that, people will say, well, don't you think the utility company would automatically do that? And I say no. Very often, you know, they're a profit-making entity, and unless you mandate and you say A, B, C, D, this is now state legislative policy, you must do A, B, C, D to make sure. So now with this, I got calls from, you know, police, fire, that, you know what, we never thought about this. This is really urgent, and maybe it doesn't happen all the time, but it does happen where, you know, they lose power.
Exactly. Yes,
it happens too often. Or the other area is people with medical conditions, people that rely on ventilators, people that rely on oxygen machines, that rely on a lot of other medical devices that won't operate if you don't have electricity. So shouldn't utility companies, you know, be proactive and have a list of people that advise them and put them on notice in a timely fashion that, hey, I have a medical condition. You know, of course, they may ask you for a doctor's note that you're on dialysis, you're on ventilator, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the utility company, in our case, Con Ed, would know and say, hey, if there's an issue, right away there's a red flag. You know, we have 150 residencies in our locality that people are on dire need. So let's make sure that we restore power, God forbid if it's lost, to those individuals. And then I had, you know, I had medical people reach out and say, you know, that was really necessary. I said, of course it's necessary. Or people that are disabled that say, you know what, you know, it's always a fear for me. People that are on these devices are so fearful of dying that, God forbid, if I lose electrical power, it's not let me sit on my couch and wait, you know, a few hours or sometimes, you know, without power, a few hours or a day may be a life and death situation, you know?
Exactly.
So these are two bills that, you know, the governor signed. It was, you know, during the time recently of the Buffalo, you know, situation. And I'm sure the governor and her staff looked at this and said, you know, those two bills, along with other utility-related, you know, were not only necessary, but I think, you know, the realization set in, hey, what are we doing? You know, we're witnessing these serious storm outages and other, you know, God forbid, hurricanes and storms and, you know, serious snow conditions like in Buffalo. And maybe we need to sign this legislation ASAP. And the governor, to her credit, did that. And of course, whenever my bills are signed, you know, I try to disseminate the information right away to make the public aware, and also to thank, you know, the individuals involved. Sometimes I reach out and thank the individuals in the Senate that took on the bills, you know, that sponsored them in the Senate, because even if I come up with a bill in the assembly, I got to find a Senate sponsor. And the Senate sponsors, if they come up with legislation, they got to find somebody in the assembly. So I put myself out, and my staff did, to my colleagues on both levels of government that, hey, mm-hmm. let's work together. Let's make sure that, you know, if something makes sense, we immediately get an assembly sponsor, a Senate sponsor, and then lobby right. the bill. And very often that lobbying helps a lot, and too many legislators don't know how to lobby. When I had the diaper bill legislation mm-hmm. that was signed by the governor recently, again, a major piece of legislation, we had the local, county, national diaper bank organizations get involved. We had them, we set up, you know, a press conference and lobbying day in Albany, and, you know, their representatives came up there, and we did a lot of good things in disseminating the information about mm-hmm. how urgent it was, you know, as far as the Diaper Act and the impact it would have on many. And I didn't realize, but nearly a third of mothers complained about the cost of diapers. And people don't realize that, you know, baby infants can have up to 12 diapers a day. And that, you know, the amount of diapers and the cost, you know, is enormous. I mean, it's about a cost of $1,000 a year per kid. I mean, for mm-hmm. many families, when you're dealing with 5% taxes on it, it's just not fair. You know, should there be taxes okay. on baby diapers? You know, should a child be in a dirty diaper or a wet diaper because parents mm-hmm. can't afford diapers? Or even adults or seniors that are on adult dependency diapers, you know, mm-hmm. should they be, you know, people don't realize the serious harm. I've seen patients, I've seen children, you know, when you look and you see their skin is like completely deteriorated and rashed and red and mm-hmm. blisters as a result of a lack of hygiene or a lack of, you know, mm-hmm. clean diapers for both infants and adults. It's serious. And how many medical doctors would come to me and talk about people that are disabled and adults? Because people, when you say diapers, right away they think, oh, it's only infants. But it's not only infants, you know. So that's something cool. like that, again, is not only now New York State policy, where at every level of government, nobody is allowed to tax diapers now. This is a new policy. Mm-hmm. Even in a city like Yonkers, you know, we had a 5% tax on diapers, you know, so yeah. now that's gone. You know, so this is another piece of legislation that soon, in my opinion, would become national law. And where did it start? Started in New York State. And where in New York State? Out of Yonkers, New York, mm-hmm. you know, and These are proud, really, these are proud moments where, you know, you look at 2022 and you look at the utility bills, the two of them, you look at the diaper, the gift card, and then something mm-hmm. as simple as when our governor became governor, you know, I was studying the language in New York State as far as whenever they refer to the governor, and it was always masculine, it was always male gender, you know, mm-hmm. his and him. And I said, wait a minute, now we have a woman governor in New York State. So do we still leave the policy and the written language in the state constitution to refer to the governor as him and his? And then, you mm-hmm. know, something as simple as gender language change now, where mm-hmm. rather than, you know, it's the governor shall and the governor will, because now it's a position. It doesn't matter if it's male or exactly. female. You know, it's exactly. the governor shall and the governor will. So something as simple as that also was great. The other thing, you know, I was talking to this past, really from almost a year and a half, to veteran organizations. You know, we all support our veterans, and we participate yeah. in the many, you know, Veteran Day activities, and I make it a point of really keeping close communication with veterans and supporting their causes. And part of that was making sure they had adequate facilities for veterans. You know, there's generally veteran posts around in Yonkers and yeah. across the county. And I had one veteran commander I'm talking to who started telling me a little bit about some of the difficulties they had. And I said, well, you know, let's listen. And one of the issues was, hey, if we get funding or we gather fundraising or we get a budget to put a handicap accessibility to the veterans post, you know, we got to go to the county or the locality and get permits and fees, and it's costly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that becomes a deterrence. That stops them from even moving forward on the project. I said, you know, that doesn't make sense. I said, our veterans, and many of them older, many of them seniors, and many of them disabled, we got to worry about them not having adequate facilities that are compatible, that address their physical needs and their ability to enter and utilize the facility. So we initiated legislation that waives all fees, all permit fees from county and municipalities whenever there's projects to renovate and restore and help veteran posts across our city and our county. That bill was received right away. It was signed into law. Like the other bills, people from both sides of the aisle jumped on board. They said, yeah, that definitely makes sense. Even County Executive George Latimer immediately, you know, supported it from the county perspective, even though he might have lost some fees, you know, but he saw the urgency of it and said, you know what, that makes sense. And, the county sometimes sends over to the state legislators, you know, a list of legislative pieces that they support, especially by Westchester County delegation members, including myself. Mm-hmm. Very often, you know, they'll support a lot of these bills, and they have, to their credit. So, you know, that type of thing, you know, shows you, you know, gift cards, gender language, you know, medical utilities, handicap individuals, diaper initiatives. It just shows you the cross-section of so many areas that, you know, impact legislation, impact New York State. And this year, you know, 2023, I have some really good ones, Hezzy. I mean, you know, we're still looking at fixing the educational funding formula. We're still looking at, you know, enhancing building aid to school districts like Yonkers that have a lot of old buildings, you know, our buildings, many of them, schools in Yonkers that are over 100 years old, you know, with the pandemic, and we want proper ventilation and handicap accessibility and sometimes elevators and an AC and coolant system and proper heating and roofs. And, you know, that doesn't happen or very difficult when you have very old buildings. And sometimes you can renovate a roof on an old building 20 times and it's still going to leak. And sometimes you just got to build a new school. But if the building aid formula doesn't work to our advantage, that's a disaster, you know, for taxpayers. And if you need three schools, you know, you end up compromising and building one. Does that address, you know, the 5,000-seat shortage we have in schools? No, it doesn't. It's like, in my opinion, a Band-Aid fix. So these are things that people argue and say, well, Sayage, you know, if you change things like that, you're changing a statewide. Well, if I need to change it, maybe it needs to be changed. Even something as simple as New York State still uses the 2000 census. Imagine to determine, you know, our student population and data. We're using the 2000, 22 years ago. All the kids that graduated high school this past year, you know, weren't even born when the census, you know, criteria was established. So, you know, things like that, you know, we look at, it makes sense. Maybe that came out of my experience as an educator for many years. I knew what I was dealing with as a principal, as a Board of Ed president, and I knew that building schools, renovating schools, having adequate seats, you know, to address growing enrollments, that was always crucial. So if I don't do it, am I supposed to rely on someone else, you know, coming up with it? Even a city like Yonkers, we're the third largest city, And we're the only major city in New York State that doesn't have a SUNY campus, a State University of New York.
Yes, that's right.
You know, which is terrible. So, you know, I know that a school of applied sciences, you know, pre-med and engineering and technology, I mean, that would be a major hit. You know, in Yonkers, you know, one of my legislative pieces calls for a new SUNY campus, a four-year college in Yonkers, mm-hmm. New York, focuses on applied sciences, engineering, technology. I mean, that would generate so much interest and, in my opinion, put us where we need to be as far as, you know, our status as the third largest city in New York State. But these
Absolutely.
Are just examples of, you know, what we do on a general basis as a, you know, in our role as assembly members.
Well, that's what makes the difference between, you know, a mediocre government and one of relevance, which is what you've created. And that's what's so compelling about your leadership role for the city and for the state and, you know, for society. It's unbelievable. Go ahead.
People don't realize that in addition to constituent services and legislation, our job also is to bring the bacon, as they say, bring funds to our locality. You know, we worked very closely with Senator, you know, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer in making sure New York State, you know, got a good share of the federal stimulus funds. Mm-hmm. From the state level, you know, we improved education where, you know, nearly in the last 2 years, $71 million was bought extra to Yonkers schools. And then personally, as a representative, you know, we get allocated capital funds, you know, and I'm looking at this year, $1.5 million that I was able as the assemblyman for Yonkers, you know, to give, for example, you know, of that $1.5 million, $150,000 to Antamaya Park to renovate what I consider one of the, you know, brightest spots in the nation when it comes to park facility and enjoyment. You know, nearly $500,000 to the Yonkers Public Schools to renovate parks, you know, parkland for kids at PS 15, at Khalil Gibran, you know, hospitals important that are really straining their budgets, you know, these days because of pandemics and, you know, the need to transport patients and work with patients. Nearly $400,000 to the local hospitals, you know, to help them. Community centers, the police fire department have a training center right here in Yonkers that will train police and fire for emergencies and tactical strategic training, $250,000 there, the Office of the Agent. These are some of the things that in our role, you know, we identify, you know, in addition to funds from city and county budgets and state, where can we put this extra funding in areas that can really benefit or areas that may not be included in the regular budget? So we provide that funding. These are the type of things, you know, and today was good because it really allowed the listening audience to understand more, you know, what the role of a state assemblyman is, what the role of a state senator is, and what the public should expect of their legislators, you know, and then, you know, back to the point of elections, you know, every 2 years for state representatives, there's an election. But that's the time for people, again, to put the dogma aside and the party affiliations and everything else and say, hey, I'm looking to vote and I need to understand, you know, who my legislators are, have they done, and what have they delivered? You know, are they successful? Are they not successful? Are they deserving of my support and my vote? And that's how the process should be. And, you know, and these opportunities, hopefully, you know, will allow more people to realize, you know, what's going on and what's working well and what we still need to address as we move forward. The economy is still an issue. Inflation is still an issue. We need to continue to deal with crime. And I've made it known that crime is very important for everyone. It's not a Republican issue. It's an American issue that we need to get more guns off the street. We need to limit crime. And if people are reaching out and saying, well, you know, the way the criminal justice system is in New York, you know, we're allowing repeat offenders or, you know, people with serious felonies, you know, to stay on the streets. Who allows that? Who wants that to continue? I surely don't want. So if there's a way we can give more discretion to the judicial system, judges. To judges, law enforcement, and to say, look, the concept of equity in bail reform is good, but if we need to fine-tune the language, I often tell my colleagues in government, you know, we can't, you know, be closed-minded. We can't ignore sometimes when there is issues, you got to address them. Crime is an issue. The last election surely, in my opinion, showed that it was a major point of concern for many, many people in New York State and right here in Yonkers. And and sometimes, you know, they may be misguided as far as, you know, fear mongering. Sometimes that's intentional, you know, fabrication, sometimes by the media, public perception. But you know, look beyond that. And keep your, you know, keep a focus on not only the issues, but, you know, what's the way we as legislators, as law enforcement, as the court systems, as criminal justice, as community advocates, what can we do to make it work better? And making it work better is not a weakness. Too often politicians feel, hey, if I had a piece of legislation and somebody's telling me to change it, then that's a black eye on me or that's a weakness. Absolutely not. I often tell people, look, feel proud of having sponsored something that's really necessary and worthy, and don't feel bad about fine-tuning. As in anything in life, we fine-tune everything we do in life to say, hey, I'm happy with what I'm doing, but is there a way I can make it better, to work better for me, for my family, for my community? And we do that. Yeah. We do that at home with budgeting, where we say, hey, I like my lifestyle, but you know what? Maybe I'm spending too much here, or I'm short of funds for this area. Let me modify what I do. And there's nothing wrong with modifying what you do, especially with the inflation. You know, we've learned to become more cost-effective. We shop better. We know costs have increased, grocery, food, insecurity. That's why many of us are involved with, you know, a lot of projects to give out, you know, food to people that need. People that are out of jobs, you want to help them make sure they have adequate protection, unemployment insurance. People that lose their businesses or need assistance, you want to make sure you help them. But at the same time, you want to make sure that, you know, fraud doesn't take place. We've learned over the years, anytime there's a good initiative and you try to help people, there's a lot of people that want to take advantage of the process. You know, so I'm a big advocate of cost effectiveness. You know, put on your humanitarian hat on. That's great. But at the same time, you know, don't waste resources. Don't allow individuals to easily or freely abuse the process. And sometimes they may be politically, you know, unpopular among individuals, and they may say, well, you can't say that. And I say that. I say that because my attitude in government, in politics, and what we do is be upfront, be fair, you know, look at the big picture, you know, try to balance the needs with, you know, the resources, with the concerns. And, you know, at the end of the day, you want to generally feel good about what we do in government. And that's why when I look at these pieces of legislation, honestly, I feel good about them. I feel, you know, they're good pieces. And when you see the governor sign off and you see the Senate join in and the majority of colleagues, it just reinforces that you've done your homework and it's something that's legit and beneficial.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I guess I didn't realize that we've eclipsed an hour of your time, and I'm thankful that you made the time for the audience. Definitely a learning experience. We're going to need to play this over and over and over again. So it's excellent. Well, listen, have a happy new year. 2023 is right around the corner.
A great year in 2023. A happy new year to all the listening audience and to you, Hezzy.
Yes.
And thank you very much for all you do.
You're a major,
you know, voice and a major presence when it comes to, you know, information. And I always say the more all of us are aware, the more we're informed, the better things are, you know. So thank you for what you do day to day, and keep up the good work, Hezzy. Happy New Year.
Thank you. All the best. Happy New Year to you and your family and the city. Definitely. Be well. Thank you, sir.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, there we have it, folks. None other than Nader Sayers. He is the assembly member that represents the city of Yonkers. He represents 85% of the city. I think it's the only community that is fully one community rather than an amalgamation of more than one district or another. So it's absolutely amazing. And I guess the thing that's really compelling about Yonkers when you come to think about it, which was evident by listening to Nader Sayers, is simply that Yonkers embodies so many different aspects of life and accomplishment and struggle that, in a sense, it's like a mini New York State. It's like a mini America, all encapsulated in this third largest city in the state of New York, and population, I think, of only about, you know, I don't know what it is, whether it's 200 or 300,000 people, but the numbers don't really matter. What matters is that we incorporate so many different people, different ethnicities, different gender, of course, different educational backgrounds, speaking different languages, speaking one language after the other. I personally speak 7 languages myself. English is the last one I learned, and that's the end of the line for me. I'm getting too old to be learning anything else. Just don't have the time for it. But it's just phenomenal how much we represent as a microcosm of the entire state, of the entire nation. And issues that matter here seem to also eclipse beyond us into the larger, greater aspect of the state of New York, and of course the nation as well. It's absolutely fascinating. And yet we're still growing, still evolving, still creating more stuff. And thankfully, we have people like Nader Sayers who can deliver the goods, whether we realize that he does or doesn't. But I hope that we'll hear more and more of exactly what he does that extols his name and is heard by fellow elected officials, not just in the Assembly, but in the New York State Senate and beyond. Absolutely thrilling. And the best part of all is he is, I believe he was born here in Yonkers, or he may have come here with his family from abroad at a very, very young age, large family, all accomplished. And Nader Sayers is the renegade of the family, because it seems that all the brothers and sisters are doctors, and he's the lawyer, which is unbelievable. But again, a very accomplished individual, and that's what really matters. What's fascinating is that his family all recognized the need for education to be able to climb to a stature of value of self and a stature of value for the community within which they live and reside and even beyond. Breathtaking, and what a wonderful legacy they've created, an example to be followed by people of difference, maybe from them, but at the same time, that difference doesn't matter because the way they and that family put their lives together, it actually encompasses every one of us. So they have the formula, and there are people worthy of being emulated, which is phenomenal. And so it is, and they're not the only one. So no matter how you define the Sayers family, with different names, different ethnicities, different genders, different religions, makes no difference. It is the human condition, and that's what he excels at, being able to deliver from a humane perspective. And he recognizes and deciphers those needs. It's absolutely brilliant. Okay, well, let's go cover some things which I think will be important as well. There are a lot of things that have happened. I guess one of the most important things is to review. From the war in the Ukraine to the death of the Queen Elizabeth II, the top news stories of 2022 certainly are highlighted. Well, Russia invaded Ukraine in late February, and as the ensuing war raged, the year saw some of the worst natural disasters on record, including wildfires in southern Europe and floods that submerged a third of Pakistan. The death of the United Kingdom's Queen Elizabeth II spelled the end of an era, and a brave new protest movement emerged in Iran following the death of Mahsa Amini. So let's look at what's happened. Early in the morning on February 24, the Russian troops that for months had been building up along Ukraine's northern fringes finally get the go-ahead to cross the border and stage a full-scale invasion, but Russia meets a tougher resistance than expected. And after a failed attempt to take the capital of Kyiv, the Russian forces are forced to retreat to the south and east to instead concentrate and, quote, liberate, end quote, the regions where they have made some headway, which include the self-proclaimed pro-Russian republics of Donetsk and Luhansk. In September, Moscow illegally annexed the two regions, along with Kherson and Zaporizhia, despite not being in full control of them. The fears that Vladimir Putin is in fact planning a wider European invasion prompt the West to supply Ukraine with equipment and arms, and the transatlantic military alliance, NATO, to massively beef up its European presence. While the Russian war machine is calculated and brutal, purposefully targeting both civilians and civilian infrastructure, leaving a long trail of war crime accusations behind it. And as the war comes to a close, the war has killed thousands of civilians and displaced some 14 million Ukrainians, of which 7 million have taken refuge in other countries. So Europe is hit by record heat waves and wildfires. From June to August, Europe is plagued by a series of record heat waves, with the mercury hitting 40 degrees Celsius. That's like really through the roof. The highest temperature is registered in Pinhal, Portugal on July 14, where 47 degrees Celsius is recorded. It's like, I have to look that up. Just bear with me a second. 1 second here. I've got to look this up. I was ever good at math. Um, Okay. Where is it here? Bear with me, I'm sorry. I can't seem to get this right here. One moment here. Let me just see if we have it. Okay. I think this time we have it. See? Yeah, that's what it is. 48 degrees Celsius is equivalent to 119 degrees in Fahrenheit. So, go figure. Those were the problems. Well, now let's look at some other things. The lack of rain in between the heat waves led to widespread droughts, which in turn result in some of the worst wildfires in history in France alone. 62,000 hectares go up in flames, seven times that of an average summer, and thousands of people are forced to flee their homes. Already at the outset of the year, the world starts to feel the pinch of higher inflation as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, and the lockdowns have led to a global supply shortage of construction materials, chips, and energy, causing overall prices to rise. Russia's invasion of Ukraine and Western sanctions on Moscow then add to the pain, also affecting global prices for oil, natural gas, fertilizer, and food. The latter is heavily affected by Russia's on and off blockade of Ukrainian ports and thereby the country's grain exports. So according to the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, the global inflation rate rose to 8% in 2022. Compared with 3.4% in 2021. In Europe, it soared to 9.1% from 3.1%, and the United States to 8.2% from 0.7%. Well, Boris Johnson stepped down as the United Kingdom's prime minister. Pakistan's devastating floods from mid-June and into October. Pakistan is hit by its worst floods in history, caused by a heavier-than-normal monsoon downfall coupled with the melting of glaciers. The floods, which at one point are said to submerge as much as a third of the country underwater, leave more than 1,700 people dead and at least 2 million people homeless. The floods come on the heels of a scorching heat wave that scientists say can be linked to global climate change, and local deforestation also contributes to the vast destruction of the floods, which affect 33 million people in total and leaves farm fields devastated and hundreds of thousands of livestock dead. Well, government officials estimate the reconstruction and economic cost of the disaster to account for as much as 10% of Pakistan's gross domestic product. Well, the FBI searches Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. On August 8, a team of FBI agents searched Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home in Florida as part of an investigation into whether the former U.S. president mishandled government documents. In all, the agents removed 20 boxes of materials, including a handwritten note, information regarding France's President Emmanuel Macron, and some documents marked top secret. Well, the warrant reveals that the FBI is also investigating whether Trump violated the Espionage Act, which prohibits the gathering, transmitting, or losing of defense information. Well, the search marks a significant escalation in one of the many federal and state investigations Trump is already facing. But despite the increasing legal woes hanging over him, Trump in November announces his intention to run for president in 2024. On December 22, he faces yet another backlash when the House Select Committee investigating the deadly January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol in 2021 publishes its final report, squarely blaming the violent events on one man, Trump. and recommending he should be barred from ever holding office again. Well, of course, then there's the death of Queen Elizabeth II. On September 8th, Queen Elizabeth II passed away of old age at Balmoral Castle in Scotland at 96. And after 70 years on the throne, she's Britain's longest reigning monarch, and her death triggers the start of a 10-day national mourning period. The Brits pour into the streets to mourn the death of the beloved queen, and on September 19th, she is given a state funeral and is buried at the King George VI Memorial Chapel alongside her husband, Philip, after services in Westminster Abbey and the St. George Chapel in Windsor Castle. Charles III, Elizabeth's eldest son and the country's longest-serving heir apparent, accedes the throne upon her death and at the age of 73. And a coronation ceremony for Charles III and his wife Camilla, the consort, is set to take place in Westminster on May 6th of 2023. Then we've got the Mahsa Amini protest in Iran. So on September 16, 22-year-old Iranian Mahsa Amini dies in a Tehran hospital after suspicious circumstances after being arrested by morality police from Iran for not wearing her hijab or headscarf properly, while authorities claim she died after suffering a heart attack and falling into a coma. Several witnesses claim Amini was severely beaten by officers prior to her collapse in the police station. Well, Amini's death caused an uproar in Iran and leads to giant nationwide protests demanding increased rights for women and the overthrow of the Islamic Republic. Women and even schoolchildren play a key role in the protest, during which many can be seen burning their hijabs or cutting their hair. Well, the government responds by brutally cracking down on the protests, calling them hybrid war, quote, end quote, carried by dissidents in foreign countries. So according to Iranian rights activist groups IHR and Harana, more than 450 protesters have been killed, including dozens of minors, and nearly 18,500 people have been arrested as the year draws to a close. Two young protesters, Mohsen Shekari, accused of rioting and attacking security forces, and Majid Reza Ranavard, accused of stabbing two security forces members to death, have been executed after being convicted of, quote, waging war against God, end quote. Their trials and execution prompt worldwide condemnation and sanctions. Well, Elon Musk becomes with Twitter's a chief twit, quote unquote. So after multiple will he or won't he twists, SpaceX and Tesla billionaire Elon Musk finally goes ahead and buys the microblog platform Twitter for $44 billion on October 27 after being threatened with a lawsuit should he withdraw from the deal. Well, the entrepreneur takes the reins in a forceful way, starting off by firing the CEO and other top executives and making himself chief twit, quote unquote. He then goes on to lay off almost half of Twitter's workforce via email and gets rid of contract content moderators as well as an independent advisory group that helps Twitter address hate speech, child exploitation, suicide, and self-harm, and other serious issues the platform often needs to deal with. Musk also announces that users will have to start paying for their blue verification checkmarks by a special subscription, and that suspended accounts, including that of Kanye West and former President Donald Trump, will be reinstated as part of his new freedom of speech policy. Users rage against the new policies, forcing Musk to halt the blue check mark subscription service. Ye doesn't last more than 2 weeks before he's kicked off the platform again after tweeting an image of a swastika combined with the Star of David. And things come to a head in mid-December when the billionaire suspends the accounts of several journalists, accusing them of sharing private information about him and his family's whereabouts. The move is condemned by both the United Nations and the European Union, with the latter threatening sanctions. On December 19, Musk launches a Twitter poll asking whether he should step down as CEO and promises to abide by the results of the poll. So some 57.5% vote in favor, with Musk responding he will step down as soon as he finds someone, quote, foolish enough, end quote, to take the job. Well, then we've got South Korea's deadly Halloween crush. So on October 29, as tens of thousands of partygoers gather in the narrow streets of Seoul's popular Itaewon district to celebrate Halloween, a crowd crush leaves more than 150 people dead, most of them in their teens or 20s, and almost 200 more injured. So although no one specific region had reason had been pinpointed to explain the deadly crush, witnesses say it occurred after people poured into a particularly narrow and sloping alley that lacked escape routes, resulting in people essentially becoming trapped in the narrow segment of the street. The incident is South Korea's deadliest since the 2014 sinking of the Sewol ferry, when 304 people died, mainly high school students. Then we go to Brazil. Lula beats Bolsonaro in a tight Brazilian election. So on October 30, and with less than 2 percentage points to spare, Brazil's leftist leader and former president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, a defeat far-right incumbent Jair Bolsonaro in the country's tightest election race yet. The results keep Brazil on edge, as Bolsonaro then remains silent for 48 hours. For months, he has claimed that the country's electronic voting system is plagued by fraud, and his supporters stand ready to take to the streets should he urge them to. Finally, Bolsonaro authorizes his government to begin preparing for a presidential transition, but still doesn't concede defeat. At the end of November, Bolsonaro challenges the result, claiming that some of the machines' votes should be invalidated, but the complaint is unlikely to go very far since Lula's victory has already been ratified by the Superior Electoral Court, the TSE. Well, then China lifts key parts of the zero COVID policy. December 7, China announced that it is going to relax the stricter parts of the draconian zero policy. The move comes barely a week after China becomes the scene of the biggest demonstrations it has seen in decades, with people spilling into the streets nationwide to protest the controlling and suppressive lockdown measures that have separated families and even left some people dead. So as part of the new rule, people who have tested positive for COVID-19 but who only have mild symptoms are now allowed to isolate at home rather than in state facilities. Lockdowns are restricted to more targeted areas rather than those neighborhoods and cities, and mass testing only applied to high-risk areas. The eased rules also mean the Chinese can travel more freely. Well, the news is greeted with cheer, but also fear, since the Chinese have abided by the strict rules for almost 3 years. At the end of December, China's hit by a huge backlash. Some 37 million people are reported to have been infected with COVID-19 in a single day. Minutes from an internal meeting of China's National Health Commission also show that around 248 million people, or about 18% of the population, and likely who have been affected since the start of the war. Okay, let me just see if I could put that in. One second here. Okay. Well, I guess that's basically it. All right, let me just quickly look. Let me just quickly see if there's anything more to share with you. Bear with me a moment here. One second here. Okay. Well, with regard to the Chinese are eyeing the border reopening with both fear and joy. So many people in China are excited about traveling abroad as COVID restrictions are eased and borders are set to reopen on January 8th. But others remain cautious, with more countries imposing restrictions for Chinese visitors. So, you know, we'll just have to see where all this goes. But this is an unraveling story, that's for sure. And bear with me a second, because there are other issues that we need to bring up to you. One second here. Well, it turns out Trump's tax returns were released after the U.S. congressional battle. So it seems that the former U.S. president fought for years to keep his tax affairs secret, even suing the committee that tried to make them public. So that's all been released now. So we'll have to go through that process, and maybe we'll have time to discuss that with you, you know, tomorrow. There was not tomorrow, actually, on Monday. We'll see what we learn over the weekend, and we'll see where that goes. One second here. All right. 1 minute. Okay, it's not working. 1 second, I'm having difficulty online. Evidently, Kyiv was attacked by overnight drones. So Ukraine said it downed 16 kamikaze drones that targeted the capital and other cities. Meanwhile, NATO chief Jens Stoltenberg said that military support for Ukraine, quote, is the fastest way to peace. So Ukraine's army said on Friday that Russia launched 16 Iranian-made kamikaze drones in an overnight attack on the country. It came a day after Moscow launched a barrage of missiles on Ukrainian cities. Ukraine's air defense destroyed all, quote-unquote, of the 16 drones from the latest attack, Ukrainian officials said. Air raid sirens wailed across the capital at around 2 o'clock local time and lasted for 2 hours. Kyiv Mayor Vitaly Klitschko said that the capital was attacked with several drones, adding that two were shot down on approach and five others over the city. It seems that Moscow targeted Ukraine's energy grid in recent months, leaving millions of Ukrainians without heating power or power in the cold winter months. So Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said in his nightly address that most regions of the country were left without power following Thursday's attack. Well, Russian President Vladimir Putin told his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping that he sought to strengthen military cooperation with Moscow's key ally, Beijing. "We aim to strengthen cooperation between the armed forces of Russia and China," Putin told Xi, calling the Chinese leader a dear friend. So that's where he is. We'll see what that is. Okay, so let's see what else we have here. I think that that's it. I see it's 11:30, running out of power as it is. So We're just going to wish you a happy new year. All the best to everyone. Take care of one another. And good health to everyone. And we'll speak to you in 2023 on Monday. Is that unbelievable? Unbelievable to say the least. Well, take care. And I'll wish you all goodbye. Take care. Bye.